Hello, hello, and welcome. Welcome once again to the Start, Scale, and Succeed podcast, the only podcast that grows with you through all seven stages of your journey as a founder. And I'm your host, Scott Ritzheimer, and we've got a great episode today. For those of you who've had some success in this entrepreneurial journey, you've reached stage four, stage five of the journey, you've got a business that's working, and you've got an eye toward the future asking yourself, what's next? So here with us today is Justin Goodbread, and we'll get to his bio in just a second, but he's going to help us think about our exit, not just in terms of the dollars and cents, which is helpful, but the team that's going to help us get there and what leadership looks like through this changing process. So who's Justin? He spent the last 30 years of his life building, growing, and selling businesses. His dedication landed him at a decamillionaire status before the age of 40. He spends his time now helping business owners to discover the proven system to make more money, grow their market, and get their life back. He's a respected keynote speaker, best-selling author, and coach of high-performing financial advisors. Justin inspires advisors to rapidly scale their companies to seven, eight, or nine figures with transferable values. Apart from being a successful business coach, Justin is also a YouTube personality, a top podcast host, serial entrepreneur, and dynamic business educator. He's here with us today. Justin, I love the book. got me with the name, Your Baby's Ugly. It was fantastic. Introduction's very true. It doesn't have to stay that way, hopefully. But in the as I was reading, there was this illustration that I've probably seen it a million times in a million ways, but it just stood out to me. It was this tale of two companies. And so for those of you who haven't had a chance to read the book, we're going to show you how you can read the book. But basically, it's this idea that there's two companies, same revenue, same profit. Well, let's assume the same industry. But then the similarities stop there. So one of the companies has it's got the systems and the processes, the software, the financial reporting, but the other doesn't. And so out of the gate, Justin, to start us off, how big a difference does that make in an exit? You know, is it like 80% is set by the profit and revenue and 20% by everything else? Or is there this a bigger part of the equation than we're giving it credit?
It could literally be seven, eight, or nine figures in valuation, which would be the difference of those two data points. So as you illustrated in Company A, they have done vast improvements to modernize the company, to decentralize the owner, to create harmony and balance across the basically 256 metrics that a company can operate on, whereas Company B did not. They are still founder-led. They are still founder-choking. They are still working with old archaic systems, probably more than likely trying to maximize profits for the shareholders or for the founder. And while in a lifestyle business, the vast majority of business owners love that idea of, hey, how can I bring home more income? How can I create more liberty for myself? You know, if I'm able to make $2 million this year, $500,000 this year, man, I'm living high on the hog, so to speak, as we would say here in the South. But whenever you look from a buyer's perspective, they want to buy ROI. They want to buy return on their purchase. And so they do not, they aren't necessarily looking for high income in so much so as, quote, the golden goose, the old proverbial golden goose. So yeah, I mean, it could be significant valuation differences between a company that has prepared for the exit and one that is reactive in nature. To your exact percentage point, there are studies done by the Academy of Mergers and Acquisitions Advisors that show as much as 80% of the value could be attributed to the intangible assets of a company. The intangible assets of a company are systems, processes, people, things of that nature that we cover at nauseam in the book.
Yeah, yeah. So you lay this out, and it was just a real simple, helpful way, and it kind of sets the foundation for a couple more questions that we're going to ask here. But just walk us through what are these eight aspects of taking care of our baby that we need to be paying attention to, and then we'll unpack a couple of these that I think are particularly important for our audience.
Yeah, Scott, I grew up in the South, man. I'm a country boy at heart. That's who I am, and I can remember, you know, in the South Georgia heat, we would go to the playground, and there'd be this thing called a merry-go-round. I don't see many of them anymore. You know, I'm showing my age here, but a merry-go-round was a big round piece of metal that had these welded bars onto it. And if you could get it spinning fast enough, it got fun. We were holding on for your dear life. And if you fell off, you laughed and giggled. And whenever I was growing up, man, we had this guy named Bubba. He was a typical Bubba. You can almost see him in his mind's eye. He was a man's man, big old guy. I mean, he was bigger than everybody else inside the group, and he loved to use his size to his advantage. And so oftentimes we would get Bubba on one side of the merry-go-round and us kids would be on the opposite side of the merry-go-round. And then when Bubba fell off, man, that merry-go-round got out of whack. As business owners, I want you to use my little simple example of Bubba in your mind now. In a business, there are eight areas that have to be in harmony for us to maximize the enterprise value or the transferable value of business. There's eight key areas, and every business has these eight areas. So the eight areas begin with leadership and with planning, where specifically you're going to go. Every company out there, every business owner is doing some sort of planning. We might call it strategic planning, annual planning, something of that nature. Then you have leadership. How are you imposing that vision to others so that they can take the charge of the mantle and execute on the vision? That's leadership. We have sales and marketing. That's number two, and that's number three and four. Two different things, two different purposes. Oftentimes, small business owners will combine those two together, but they have two different purposes. So you have sales and marketing. You have people and operations. So that would be your internal people, your customers, your vendors, all the people who work within the business or are attached to the business. And operations is how we deliver upon the product, the service that the customers bought. And then the final, the last two is finance and legal. Finance is basically APAR, accounts payable, accounts receivable, you know, looking at almost like through the mind of a CFO, a chief operating officer, and a CFO together. And then legal is all the risk things, right? That would be insurance, your legal documents, when you go to exit the company, definitive documents, things of that nature. What happens in business is we all start out, we're founders, as you said, phase one, we're founders, and you know, we roll our sleeves up and we're tenacious and we charge hell with a water pistol. We're out there making it happen. As we move through your seven phases, at some point, we're going to reach the point to where everything is stagnant because of us. Our abilities have caused us to hit a glass ceiling. Our leadership has caused us to hit a glass ceiling. Our market, whatever it may be, somewhere within those eight areas, we as founders find ourselves in the center of the merry-go-round. That's the safest place to be, dude. Whenever Bubba was on one side and somebody else on the other, if I could get to the middle of the merry-go-round, I'm not falling off. I'm sitting there watching everybody hanging off the side, waiting for them to fall off, right? So we as business owners get to the center because it feels safe. Reality is that's not safe. It's costly. What we want to do is totally exit the merry-go-round and have our friends, our big clients being offset by small clients, our dynamic key players being offset by maybe not the dynamic key players. You're trying to build a business that is in harmony. And if you can do that without you, the owner, riding the merry-go-round, in my simple metaphor, if you can do that, then dude, you built a business that an investor will literally line up and pay you bank for. Or you may say, you know what, good Brett, I don't want to sell the company. I've been there. I'm right there. I'm on one of my own companies right now. That's cool. Now, instead of an investor paying you bank, now you sit back and you've got the golden goose created that can operate without you, and you can collect your dividend or you can collect your income and just sit back and enjoy the business from a different angle.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hi there, this is Scott. Thank you so much for listening. We're going to get back to the show in just a few seconds, but first, I wanted to let you know about my brand new Founders Evolution Quiz. If you're a founder, business owner, or CEO who feels overworked by the business you lead and underwhelmed by the results you're getting, you're doing it wrong. Succeeding as a founder all comes down to doing the right one or two things for right now. So take the quiz today at founderskiz.com. Again, that's founderskiz.com. And in just 10 questions, you can figure out what stage you're in so you can focus on what's going to work and say goodbye to everything else. Now, back to the show. Speaking of different angles, you took a different angle in the book that I really, really appreciated. For folks who are familiar with the work that we do a lot around leadership styles and how those relate to the actual tactics and strategy and planning of the business. And you do something very similar using the DISC model. So tell us, why do these different personalities matter for these eight areas?
Yeah, so the DISC is one that I say is an owner's simple barometer. It's you know, we could go to the Myers-Briggs, we have 16 personalities. We can do, there's a plethora of different types of personalities exams out there. To me, the DISC is the simplest one that a founder, that an owner can look at, don't have to know all the details, but can recognize what's happening in the company. So if you take those eight areas and we go back to my merry-go-round, there was one merry-go-round that when I would go to the park, one quarter of the merry-go-round was painted blue, one quarter was painted red, one quarter is painted green, and one quarter is painted yellow. So we had this, you could look at the merry-go-round and you could tell that it looked like a piece of pizza that had four different types of pizzas together, right? The same is true with business. So you have planning and leadership is a quadrant. That, let's call that blue. Sales and marketing are in alignment. People and operations are in alignment, and finance and legal are in alignment. But if we look at a company, the personalities needed to be the leader and the planner is different than the personalities needed to handle people, HR, and deal with operations. The personality is different between the sales and marketing team than that of legal and finance. And so if you take the DISC theorem, DISC stands for dominant, influential, steady, and conscientious. So four different personalities. Without diving into the details of DISC, here's a simple way to apply it. D is dominant. Oftentimes, your CEO or your leader is going to be a higher D than any other personality type. And so if you understand that you have somebody in a leadership position and now they're a high S personality, we're going to have some misalignment. There's going to be some problems. Or if they're leaders, maybe they need to be leading the operations department because that's where the S would sit. So D is dominant, I is influential. Those are the fun-loving people, right? They're the life of the party. You walk in the room, their personality is bigger than the room, and you just love to be around them. They make you feel good. They're just fun, right? That's not me, by the way. I'm like a high off the charts D. So these people are just fun to be around. That's typically your creatives. That's your marketing. Your S are your checklist people, right? They like to look through checklists. That's operations-minded people. Step one, step two, step three, step one A, little B, step one B. I mean, they have this mindset that goes through this checklist. And then your Cs are often the very analytics. There's typically your CFOs, your chief compliance officers, your attorneys, the ones who want to fuss over a penny. Where did that penny come from? For me as a D person, I was like, I don't give a flying flip. It's one penny. But for them, it matters greatly, right? I also say attorneys love to fuss over commas and exclamation points. It matters to them. So why these personalities matter from a business owner's perspective is, again, we want to build a business where it can operate without us. So if I'm looking at the business and I have a strong dominant leader on my team who is a DI, that means they're dominant and they're fun-loving, there's going to be conflict between that leader and the SC personality. Because the dominant person, they're not in the weeds. The S personality is down there building a checklist and the C personality is going super deep into the weeds. When in business, what we often will see is most handily is your marketing and sales people, because their I personalities are not in the weeds, they're not super detailed, they're fun, they can just say things and they want everybody else to deliver on them. Oftentimes they'll have a great amount of conflict between the C personalities, those extreme detail persons. So if you're building a team that's transferable, that's the key, Scott. You want a team that a buyer will adopt and they'll bring into the their presence, and the company will operate without you in the center of that merry-go-round. If you're building a team that is transferable, then those personalities have to be weighted. Using my little silly example of Bubba, they have to be weighted to where you don't have one personality so much heavier than everybody else on the merry-go-round that the merry-go-round can't operate. So from an owner's perspective, just simply looking and saying, hey, you know, we're having some struggling in our operations department. They're closing some deals. The sales team's closing deals. But now here we are in operations and we're just not delivering. We're running lethargically. We're not delivering on time. We're having a lot of QC issues. There is a disconnect between the sales department and the operations department. And I would almost guarantee you that it's a personality misalignment within the organization.
Yeah. It's so true. And there's so many things that this starts to set into order for us. But one of them is just the recognition that, you know, your idea of it being transferable is up to this point, the team you've built around you has always been around you. It's been the team that you need to do your job, right? And to do their jobs. And this is really the first time that we start thinking about building a team that's going to be here after us. And you need a balance of all of these. And sometimes that means filling the void that you're going to leave behind, which is something a lot of folks don't quite recognize. And what they end up doing is pulling their sales ops person, right? Sales marketing person who's an I and putting them in a D seat. And the whole thing really starts to struggle. So I love that overlay. It's in, again, it's in there in the book, and just adds so much clarity and color to what would otherwise be a really rote process of trying to get all the pieces in place. It's really a human thing.
Whenever you're a founder, or whenever you're scaling a business to replace you from being in the center of the merry-go-round, what I would often recommend, this is how we coach our clients, is find the person opposite of you first. Most founders are going to be dominant type of personalities. Why? Because you had to have the grit and tenacity in order to charge hell with a water pistol against all odds, against every business plan out there, and say, no, I believe we can do this. So more than likely, you're a high D. You may be a DI, a DC, one of those personalities. Like, I'm a high D with a C, which is why I love building businesses, setting up teams, and getting myself out of the way and letting them work. So that's my personality. So if I'm going to hire somebody, I'm going to hire an S personality, somebody that can take those things off my plate that I don't care to know. I don't want to know the step-by-step process on how we're going to deliver. This is what I want to accomplish as the founder of the company. I want to go in this direction, figure it out. So I have to have a dynamic, for me, as dynamic as I am on my high D, I have to have an off-the-charts S personality. So my chief operating officer has got to be a stud. They have to be. So if I build my stud opposite first, now I've got some balance. Well, my other two quadrants on my merry-go-round, they may not have to have the same dynamic personality, but they have to be balanced. Where the handoff becomes is whenever I want to replace myself with a president or a new CEO or a new visionary. That is tough. And here's why. The title of the book is Your Baby's Ugly. It's not by accident. My dad used to say, son, growing up, he would say, son, you never tell a woman their baby's ugly, but if you do, you better run or duck because they're coming after you. They're going to throw something after you. They're going to chase you down, but you don't, because it's my baby. The same pride that we have, like we would look at our kids and that pride swells up within us, it converts to a hubris pride real quick with us founders that no one can do this as good as me. And that's just not true. And so as we build the systems out, there comes a point, and where we coach our clients to do is say, go away for 6 months. And that, whenever I say that, if you're listening to me and your heart just fell, it means you're not ready for this. Okay. So you can build yourself to the point, but go away for 6 months. Let's expose the problems. In a 6 month time period, if you've done great leadership and great systems, then the company is not going to flounder because of lack of leadership if you built the structure properly. But after 6 months, you're going to need a dynamic president, or you're going to need somebody within the key position. Where I like to lean into is finding somebody like me. Now, here's the conflict. Opposites attract, similarities often repel. So the problem is that I often see within myself and with other founders is when we go to replace ourselves, we start micromanaging our replacements. Austin Powers used to have the stupid video. They had mini-me on there, right? We're literally finding the mini-me, not in a comical sense, but you're finding somebody who can replace you. And when you do that, we end up seeing all the things we don't like about ourselves in that person. And we micromanage. Yeah. And that, I got to tell you, Scott, I've seen that cost founders 8 figures before, just not able to lease control.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Justin, I think we could talk for about 7 more hours, but I want to be conscious of both your time and our audience's time here. So before I let you go, I've got one more question for you, and that is this. What would you say is the biggest secret that you wish wasn't a secret at all? For those founders that are listening that are in this place right now, what's that one thing you wish that they knew?
So we have a podcast called The Decamillionaire Way. A new book's coming out. It's going to be talking about The Decamillionaire Way. And the biggest secret that should not be a secret is the sheer amount of money that you're going to need to have freedom. So I want you to think about it this way. Right now, you may be paying yourself, let's say $250,000. That seems to be a number that founders want to get to. Pay yourself $20,000 a month take-home pay. More than likely in your company, you're also perhaps paying your significant other. You perhaps are buying a car, cell phone, computers, trips, whatever else going through the company that your tax advisor has allowed you. When you start adding up all the benefits of your company in terms of compensation for yourself, it is not uncommon to see founders who are bent a finny economically at $400,000 a year, $500,000 a year, or $600,000 a year. So I want you to think about this. When you're building a company, and more than likely 80% of your net worth is wrapped up in this company, and the only way that you're going to gain true freedom is to turn this highly illiquid asset into a liquid asset. Because even if you build it to where you have the golden goose and you're out on the beach one day, your still mind's going to be back there wondering what if. So the only way you're going to have true mental freedom is to turn it from an illiquid asset to a liquid asset, which means that the amount of money you're going to need to sustain your life is far greater than you ever imagined. So let's per venture say that you sold your company for $10 million. By the time you pay Uncle Sam, by the time you pay the broker, by the time you pay the attorneys, the CPAs, the advisors, the broker, whoever else involved, it's not uncommon to lose 10, 15, 20, 30% of the value. So let's say it's 10 million. And let's just do some simple math. And let's say that you lose 40% because you live in a high tax state and you didn't do the planning right. And you have $6 million. 6 million times 5% is only 300 grand. The reality, the secret to what I'm, the answer to your question, Scott, is this. You need to aim for a valuation of 10 million plus in today's value if you're even the least bit successful. And what got you to the point where you're at today is not the same pathway that you're going to have to take to shift it from your current valuation to a decamillionaire valuation. It's a whole different amount of thinking. And that single thing that I want to shout from the mountaintop and wave the yellow flag, the caution flag out there, is to say, friends, don't wait. Start building today. Start building your journey today. Figure out what that exit needs to be. Let's backwards and calculate in that data points and build that journey and then charge hell with a water pistol. Believe you can do it and make it happen.
Yeah. So good. So good.
Justin, just fantastic information, both in the book and here on the podcast. Clearly an expert in what you do. I really appreciate your time and attention coming here and spending with us today. And for those of you who are watching and listening, you know that your time means the world to us. I hope you got as much out of this episode as I know I did. And I cannot wait to see you all next time. Take care. Scott Ritzheimer here. Thank you so much for listening to the Start, Scale, and Succeed podcast. I hope this episode gave you exactly what you need for your stage right now. If you want to discover what stage you're in, take our 10-question Founders Evolution quiz for free at founderskquiz.com. That's founderskquiz.com. It'll pinpoint exactly where you are and give you tailored tips to move forward and reach that next level in your journey as a founder. If you got something out of today's episode, would you do us a favor and share it on social media? Just grab a quick screenshot on your phone, text it to a friend, or post it on your favorite platform. Tag us and use hashtag StartScaleSucceed. I'd love to see your posts. You can also head over to scalearchitects.com/podcast to check out more episodes tagged by your stage so you can focus on what matters most right now. Don't forget, subscribe, rate, review. It helps us to reach more founders like you, and it means a ton to me and my team. So let's keep starting, scaling, and succeeding together. I'll see you in the next episode.